We are mostly live and completely local. This is Metro South Podcasting.
Welcome to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us and how it affects us here on the South Shore of Massachusetts. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Good morning, welcome to the program, or good afternoon, whenever you happen to be listening to the show today. Thank you so much for doing so. On the PODcast on Metro South Podcasting, it's the Ron Van Dam Show, that's my name. Thank you so much for allowing me to come into your whatever it is you're listening this to thing on the... maybe it's your computer, maybe it's your bathtub, I don't know. Whatever. Good to be with you, thank you so much. How are you? Good. You know what? Yesterday I was driving down the street. I went to... a fundraiser for a candidate for probate court. I know what probate is. Sounds like that's what they do to you when you need to have your prostate checked. We're going to have to bring you into the office and probate you. Oh, ouch, ouch. Don't probate me too hard now.
No, don't worry.
You have to take me out to dinner first. Probate is when someone usually passes. You have to go through probate in order to release the assets. Stuff like that there. And related things on a more general basis. I don't know why you need to elect somebody to sit there and probate it. Not that the person who gets into this office probates anything or sits on a bench or is a judge. You just get a title and a fat check for three figures every year. I don't quite understand why it's an electable position. But it is. If you asked 100 people what the minister of probate or whatever the hell the name of the thing is, the whatever, what that is, 99 out of 100 would say, I don't care, I don't know, but it sounds probatable. I don't know, nobody knows what this is. It's one of those little things in society that you just go, I guess you know what you're doing. We'll vote anybody into anything. I guess if you read the job description, then you're qualified. But there are some fine candidates. One of them, I think, would be a very good candidate. I went to his fundraiser. He raised funds. It's a county position, which means you have to campaign in multiple towns, of which there are probably at least over a dozen, probably even more than that. I really don't know. That's a lot of towns, baby. It's a lot of towns. Takes a lot of money to campaign. I was telling somebody last night at this fundraiser, as I was drinking alcohol in large amounts of it, which is what great... fundraisers are fantastic. You can drink everywhere these days. Anyway, I'm saying this person, you know, there should be... It should be like a game show where here's $5,000. You can't spend another cent. Let's see who best spends the $5,000. Who, out of all the candidates, can take this money and get the best use out of it? You can't spend a dime over $5,000, but that's the rules. Ready and go. And then the candidates run around and they spend their $5,000 in the best, most efficient way that they can. That would be a contest, you see. That would be a contest. Instead, you have the ability to sit there and raise as much money as you can or you can't, and may the person with the best fundraising abilities win the position. That sucks the big thing, baby. That's no way to win an election. That means nothing. The person with the most money wins. What is this, a Romney campaign? I mean, seriously. That just sucks. I mean, the whole political system just sucks, the big one, because of that very reason. Because people are not on level playing fields. The person with the most money has a great advantage, and that really should not be. In any phase of life, in any lobbying group, in any power plant thing, it should always be on equal financial footing. Person with the most money should not be winning. But it's America, and you can't stop things like that. You can't regulate things like that. It's whatever. And that's the way we end up. We're back in the monarchy. You know, the king has the most money, and all the slaves shall die. Slaves, knaves, whatever you want to call them. Still got an Aves in it. Anyway, that was my conversation last night with this person at the bar as I had a couple of vodka and waters, and it was a lovely experience. Anyway, there you have that. Yesterday we broadcasted live from, PODcasted live from Charlie's Restaurant and Diner at the entrance to Brockton High School. Thank you to all of you that came down to witness the PODcast. We're probably going to do this on a weekly basis, really don't know. The other question that I got last night when I met with the pubic public, sorry, that one little letter L means a lot to a lot of people. I kept getting the question, when are you going to get a phone number so we can call the show? Well, see, it goes a little bit deeper than that. The show is recorded early in the morning and posted for the POD casting site by 9 o'clock, which is when I used to be on the air on the terrestrial radio. So that's the goal. What I need to do this week, hopefully I can figure this out, is do the what they call live podcasting, which is basically internet radio. We're working on that for some time next week so that you can listen live on your computer or whatever. Some people in their cars have internet radio. That's very cool, too. I believe within 3-4 years, every new car will have internet radio, and you can hear us again in the car. If I'm still alive and I'm still doing this, I really don't know what the next day is going to bring. This thing is growing greatly, and that's a wonderful thing, but it could enter into other opportunities, and I'll let you know as they go along if you keep checking in with the site. Thank you so much. I owe you a coffee or something like that. Well, not even. Kind of you owe me a coffee. It's kind of more like that. Anyway, so I don't know what's going to happen. But anyway, that's what I'm working on right now, is being able, through this Metro South podcasting, to take live phone calls in a live streaming as it happens kind of thing. And then you can also hear the recordings of them going on in a later date. And I believe that we can do this probably through quite a few different situations. We're also being picked up by iTunes and TuneIn Radio in Brockton.com and a multitude of other locations. Thank you so much for letting us join your fine family of connections. Okay, let's move on, ladies and gentlemen. So I'm driving down the street last night, coming back from the Joe Angelo's function. What a wonderful place Joe Angelo has. He's a nice dude. Joe, if you're listening, you're a nice dude, man. You're a good guy. You're just down-to-earth, normal guy who happens to own a bar and a nice restaurant and does great things for the city and lets fundraisers occur there. You know, that's a good man. So thank you. Thank you. In any event, so I'm driving home. I'm driving down Main Street. I'm going, well, let's say up Main Street. I'm going from south to north, which is the only direction you can go when you're downtown. And I'm remarking to myself about, looks pretty good, man. Most of Brockton looks pretty damn good. That Main Street is the facades of the building. And don't get down. The word facade, there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't mean that it's false. It means that the image is being protected and upheld, and that's fine. Everybody needs an image. You can be the most efficient person in the world, but if you're dressing like a bum, excuse the expression, and your pants are falling down around your knees and you're unshaven and there's pus oozing from your face, you might be the best, most efficient person in the world, but man, you look like crap, and no one's going to take another look at you, and they're probably just going to run you over anyway. Put a good suit on, clean yourself up. You can be like nothing inside and look very plausible. Image is, I wouldn't say it's everything, but it's pretty damn good. You find a woman with large breasts, a nice rack, and a beautiful face, and all that kind of stuff, and a nice figure, that person's going to be very successful in life. You're a fat, chubby little piece of crap. You can be as intelligent as you possibly can. People aren't going to look in your direction. It's facades. There's nothing wrong with it. It's image. Is it one-dimensional? Sure. Is it stupid? Yeah, mostly sure. But it is what it is. So let's get with the program. So anyway, so I'm driving down Main Street, and the buildings are starting to look good. They're cleaning up the front of the buildings. They're doing that big construction thing across the neighborhood health center. I don't know what the hell it's called anymore. The Renaissance Project, the Project Runway. I have no idea what it's called. But that's, you know, you see that it's being worked on and stuff. And the buildings are looking pretty good. And things tend to be pretty clean. Of course, you turn the corner on Pleasant Street. It looks like a slum. But other than that, it's fine. And the problem is you go a little further up around where the Brockton Community Access, Brockton Community Cable Television building is at 1 North Main Street. And all of a sudden, Main Street starts looking like, don't think so. Changes all of a sudden. As much as the efforts to clean up Main Street seem to be okay, you start hitting that, Main Spring House, is that what it's called? Whatever. Around one North Main, that area there, rough looking, man. It starts getting rough looking. I've said this on the air so many times, or whatever you call this thing. I have a great large heart, for those that are downtrodden. Anybody can lose their job, especially what happened in 2008 with the recession, depression. People down and out, they need help. I get that. That's one thing. The other thing are people that are somewhat mentally unbalanced and can't get it together enough to really have an organized life. I still feel bad for them, but they need a different kind of help. The point is, no matter what the point is, get them off the streets. Get that crap off of Main Street, man. If you're going to promote an image, you've got to protect the image. Move that stuff away. Problem is, where do you put it? When you move it away, where do you put it? Because nobody wants it. Nobody wants it in their neighborhood at all. So what do you do? What do you do with that? How do you stop homeless people and people that are down and out from roaming the streets? Here's the answer. And it comes in a very cold-hearted manner. But it is what it is. And short of the tent city concept, by the way, the tent city concept is not a bad idea, because tent city is hidden from the public. Most of the public in Brockton doesn't even know it's there. Most of the towns outside of Brockton don't even know it's there. It is, it's a refugee camp surrounded by trees. Put up a fence. I don't know, put up a wall. I mean, it's demeaning, but it's, you know, it's a demeaning situation anyway. Yeah, let them have their own community. But here's the thing. You can't break the law. You can't roam the streets. You got to stay in your gated community. I mean, hey, they do that. You know, consider it. Consider it Aruba or Cancun. You know, it's an all-inclusive. It's, you know, you don't wander outside of the compound because it's too dangerous. You stay inside the compound, but as long as you stay there, you got a place to stay. But don't leave the gates. Don't leave. It's a gated community. Stay within the gates. You go outside the gates and you don't look too good, you'll be arrested. And if you don't have the clothes, I'm sorry. It's the United States. You can't do it. You can't solicit. You can't panhandle. I mean, Ron, you can legally. No, you can't legally. There are ways around it so that you can't. And it shouldn't happen. And you can't just sit on a curb all day and watch the traffic go by. That's you can't do that. That's not allowed. You move it on. That's the when the old Irish cop, you say, all right, move it on, get on, move it on. You can't just sit there and squat. You got to move. You got to keep moving. You got to have a purpose. If not, you can be questioned and stopped. And I say that's how you clean up the streets. These people are not criminals. They shouldn't be arrested. They should be brought to some other place. You can't just stand around. You got to keep moving. And if those aren't the laws, then change the laws. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry if you're down and out. There are plenty of social services here. You can be helped if you want to be helped in many different ways on many different levels. If you want to help pull yourself out of the gutter, there are people that will lend you a hand and pull you out. If you care not to be pulled out of the gutter, then we've got a problem with you. We're not going to send you to Taunton or Randolph or some other place. We're going to deal with you here. But we're going to make a concerted effort to get this thing going. And as I said, many churches should start taking some people in. But as soon as you wander outside of that church or cause any trouble or get loud or profane or act in a manner to disrupt family life on the streets, you will be removed and brought back to where you came from. Just like a child coming over the border, you'll be brought back to Guatemala. And that's the way that I would treat it. I know the mayor of the city of Brockton is very image conscious. He actually wears a suit. I mean, how more image conscious can you be from a man that didn't used to wear a suit? I mean, you know, he's image conscious. He's has a job. He has to fit the image. He's as down to earth gets, but he knows in certain circumstances you got to dress up. That's what the deal is. And that's what I'm saying to the quote-unquote, excuse the expression, bums. Sometimes, man, if we're going to give you a suit, put it on. Get it cleaned up. We'll give you some money to help it get it cleaned up, but you have to do it. And you can't wander the streets where the other people are. Unless you're going to assimilate, you have to go away somewhere and stay within the confines of a gate. And that's my deal. You can agree with me. You can disagree with me. People disagree with me all the time. That is just fine. But part of this deal is to stimulate conversation, stimulate thought. I can't have conversation with you because we're not set up for that. But stimulate thought is the idea. Okay, fine. That's wonderful. Everything's fine. Everything's wonderful. Is everybody happy? Good. Thank you very much.
Over the internet and into your face, it's the all-new Ron Van Dam Show on Metro South Podcasting. You've got some Van Damme on your cheek there, just up by your, right there.
Wipe
you
that
probably
off.
Want to wipe that off quickly.
Good idea.
That stuff really stains.
Thank you. I watch a lot of television. I'm a vid kid. I always have been. When I was younger, all I did was watch television, watch this, watch that, watch out. Everything was watchable. I'd watch the dryer spin. I mean, it was. I just loved to watch things. Watched a lot of television. I watch a lot of television now. At my age, which is not that high and certainly not that low, I have decided that I will not be putting up with television commercials that make me feel bad. When I watch television, it will be for a certain type of experience. I will learn through documentaries or travelogues or whatever the case may be. I will learn. Sometimes I will be entertained. I will laugh at comedies and shows that I enjoy. I will find out about the justice system from Judge Judy, which, by the way, has almost nothing to do with justice. It just has to do with a woman who is crabby and assholish and entertaining, because we enjoy people on television being assholes to other people, and you know that's true. We enjoy Judge Judy. She is syndicated-wise. She's been number one for almost a decade now, the highest-paid female on television at this point. We used to like to watch Simon Cowell on American Idol just put people down without any thought or feeling, which spawned other judge shows where the greatest thing about it is the theatrics of the judge saying, "You're horrible. Let's face it. You shouldn't even be on stage." We revel in that kind of stuff. We like that kind of stuff. Anyway, that has nothing to do with anything. So I decided I am not going to be watching negative things. And as I get older, and you people in your 20s and 30s, you probably won't understand what I'm talking about. So go suck a lollipop. This is for people who are 40 and above. This is when you start getting concerned about the health, when you realize that in medieval times, people didn't live this long, that now you're on borrowed time. I couldn't call it borrowed time. I would just say that you're starting to beat the odds just a tad, and which is fine, and we tend not to think about those things. But you are self-conscious of that. When I'm watching television, especially in the daytime, and all of a sudden there's a commercial you have back pain? As you get older, your skin wrinkles and you start to look really terrible. Here are the Cancer Treatment Centers of America. When you get cancer, and you probably will, if you live long enough, we can treat your cancer. It's not fun, but... if you're in mental problems and depression, it can cause depression, then take Altoids. Altoids beat depression, and do not take Altoids if you're pregnant or if you have depression. Even though it's for depression, don't take it if you have depression. Altoids can cause depression. The very thing that you're trying to take the pill for, it can cause that too. If you have high blood pressure, don't have it anymore. It just goes on, and it just makes you feel like, man, this is like dodgeball. Like, I'm amazed that I don't have anything. I'm just dodging all these diseases, and apparently, according to television, everybody in the world has type 2 diabetes. You have type 2 diabetes. We have a new pill that comes out. You take it once a day, and you don't have to check your blood, and you probably have type 2 diabetes. I'm looking at you. That's right. So I don't watch television to be told how many diseases either I'm going to get, could have, or probably have and don't even know it. I'm sick of that. Stop making me feel bad. Stop reminding me on a daily television basis, just how sick I can be. I'm sick of hearing how sick I can be. They're not looking out for me. They're trying to sell me stuff to make me feel better about things I didn't even know I had, but I probably have them, and if not, I'm going to get them probably real soon. I've fallen and I can't get up. Hey, Ron, that's going to be you someday. Better get the medallion, put it around your wrist or your neck, man, because you're screwed on the floor for 17 days until you die. What? What? I'm trying to enjoy an entertainment program, and I'm seeing some geriatric lying on the floor crying for her life. What's that about, man? That's not why I tuned into this thing. I thought I was going to get everything commercial-free originally with the cable thing. Now I got to watch about my own eventual demise and what to do about it? Come on, that's not why I turned the TV on. That wasn't my point. It wasn't my purpose. I want to be entertained. I want to laugh. I want to smile. Give me a nice romantic comedy. Don't tell me how I'm going to die in 2 minutes, and this is how I can stop it if it possibly works at all. God, you watch a show like The Doctors or Dr. Oz, and it's like, apparently I'm living just to try to keep on living. That's my only purpose in the breath of life, is to have the breath of life. Because according to Dr. Oz, I'm screwing everything up. I don't know what I'm doing. I should be taking Mandarin Orange pills. I don't know what Oz is trying to tell me. I really seriously don't understand him. And to be honest with you, the guy's face is a little too skinny, his cheeks are drawn in. I think there's something wrong with him. But I'm not going to comment. I'm not going to make a big deal about him. So that's a decision I made. No more of that crap. I'm not watching that stuff. I'm done. I'm done with that. No more of the sad, sad commercials. And if you don't look too good, you should also be sad. Because everybody who's hawking stuff looks like they're wonderful, and you know in comparison, you don't look like that. Marie Osmond, the very attractive girl, she lost 50 pounds on Nutrisystem or something like that. I don't even know. She lost 50 pounds. She looks wonderful. She's probably 87 years old. I really don't know how old she is, and she looks fantastic. You can look like her too, but only if you spend money and get the Nutrisystem thing. Otherwise, let's face it, you're a fat little slob and you don't look like Marie Osmond, and feel bad about yourself. Everybody feel bad about yourselves because you can't live up to what you're seeing on the screen. Well, it's always been like that, hasn't it? Who's telling you about cosmetics? Supermodels. Supermodels. Did you ever meet a supermodel before? Seem like very, very nice people. Like, oh man, would I want to be married to a supermodel? And girls, you know, you see these handsome guys like that guy from Maroon 5. I don't even know his name. Alex Birnbaum. I have no idea what his name is. But the Maroon 5 guy, now he's doing shaving commercials and all this kind of stuff. And like he was named, Time Magazine or something magazine's most eligible person or handsome person or whatever the case may be. You figure, oh, wow, be married to him would be a perfect, perfect life. And you know what? It doesn't matter what a person looked like. And sometimes when they look really good, they're even bitchier than normal because they know they got it. And you go through your whole life with these supermodels, wondering when they're going to jump ship and go with someone who's more handsome than you are. And if you degrade in any way, they'll be off with somebody else because they're supermodels. Not only do they have the celebrity name, but they look damn good because they have the money to change their face every 6 minutes. Excuse the expression, but I mean, this is like a live-in bitch community that you're hooking up with here. They know they got it. And you're always wondering if you don't. That's why large fat people are so enjoyable and jolly, because their personalities make up for their lack of outwardly beauty. I know everybody's outwardly beautiful. I get all that. I'm talking like honestly and like, very transparently. That's true. They compensate with these fantastic personalities. And those are the kind of people that you stay married to. Those are the kind of people that you have long relationships with, those that personality-wise you can really get along with. I mean, those marriages don't last either because these people get ugly, but people get antsy. But at the same time, it's more sustainable if you have a wonderful personality than if you don't have too many lines on your face. That doesn't really sustain a relationship all that much. You may say, Ron, you don't know what you're talking about. And I would respond by saying, who said that I did? Seriously. Yesterday on the show, when we were at Charlie's Diner, the subject came up again of my romantic involvement with Fran Drescher, which is not the case. I was never romantically involved with her, to my knowledge. I don't know. And I don't even know if it was Fran Drescher. Just to recap, for those of you that may not have followed this Kardashian-like who cares story. When I was younger, I went to camp. My parents shipped me out to camp all the time. They didn't want me around the house. I was a social misfit. I was too shy. So from the age of probably 10 years old till all the way up to 16 or 17, I went to summer camp, which means that as soon as school let out, they would put me on a bus and I'd be in a summer camp all summer. I don't know what they did while I was away at summer camp. Probably had sex in my bed. I really don't know. That's disgusting. I don't know what they did because I wasn't there. But they shipped me away. And in some summers, I cried through the whole thing because I was homesick. And I started to get used to it. And then when I got toward my older teenage years, I still went to summer camp. But I went as a counselor. I actually got paid to be there as a drama counselor, is what I was, because I am so overly dramatic. And it was okay because I had my first sexual relationships there. I had my first love there. I learned to assimilate with nature. I got mosquito bites. All kinds of things happen in summer camp. And a lot of things that I now don't like were blossom from a summer camp. Anyway, in my later years, probably when I was about 14 or 15 years old, I was an assistant drama counselor at the summer camp. It was a huge summer camp. I think the name of the camp, and I'm really not too sure, was Crystal Lake Camp. And you're saying, hey, wait, that's the camp on Friday the 13th. Yeah, same name. Not the camp. People weren't murdered that I know of. Just same name. I believe it was Crystal Lake Camp. I really can't remember the name because I went to so many different camps. And in this camp, there was a nurse's assistant. They had a nursing station in this camp. There were hundreds and hundreds of kids that went to this thing. Hundreds of kids. And there was a nurse's assistant, and her name was Fran. And when Fran laughed, she had the Fran Drescher laugh. It was, But she was a very attractive girl. She had very wavy, kinky hair. Kinky. And we were friends. And I don't remember if we fooled around or not. I really don't remember. But we were friends enough, we hung out enough that, and she was older than I by about 3 years, 4 years maybe. Because she was in more of a paid position than I was in. I was an assistant thing, and she was probably around 17, 18 years old, and I was probably around 15, something like that. We had arranged, when the summer ended, to see each other outside of camp in the real world. I was living in Jackson Heights. She was living in Jackson Heights, New York, Queens. She was living in Canarsie. Her family was uprooted from Flushing, New York, which is only like 3 minutes away. I remember going to her house and her apartment in Canarsie a few times. She lived with her parents because she was only like 17, 18. And after that, things just fizzled out. And I don't remember why or anything like that because everything was a blur because of smoked pot back then. Kids, don't smoke pot. You'll end up like me. Ooh, there's your lesson. When I was doing radio, I was talking to David Casella, this subject came up, and all of a sudden there was a wonderment in my head. Did I actually date Fran Drescher, or was it a girl named Fran who sounded like Fran Drescher, who happened to be from the same town and around the same age? I have no concept. I do not know. People, when they're in their teens, look totally different than they do in their young adulthoods, and certainly totally different than they do in their older adulthoods. So I don't know. So I contacted a friend of mine, Mark Schepeta, who's a private detective. He's a private dick. Although to many, he's a dick to everybody. No, he's a good guy. I just make fun of the title of dick. And if your name is Richard, I totally apologize. Not my fault. Mark was not able to get anywhere with this. And because I didn't pay him, and he has other things to do. I mean, you know, this is not like a gigantic multi-million dollar case or anything. But the curiosity does still remain. Now, Peter Zimbor called me yesterday. Hi, Peter. How you doing? And he said, Ron, I'm going to get to the bottom of this Fran Drescher thing. To which I didn't respond at the time. I went, oh, cool. But, you know, if it was her, what am I supposed to do? She doesn't live in New York anymore. She's a California girl. She's famous. She married a gay guy by mistake. She didn't know that. And then she got remarried. She's had a life. Would she even remember me? The only verification that it was Fran Drescher or it wasn't Fran Drescher that I had a quasi-relationship with, to my knowledge, it could have gone further. I may not just remember because I was quite, I was quite prolific back at that age. If it didn't move I dated it and then some in my younger days. Now I'm very conservative. Back then, not so much. No diseases, though. No diseases. So the only curiosity, asked Fran Drescher, where did you go to? Did you go to summer camp in upstate New York? And if so, what camps did you go to? The mere fact that she may have gone to summer camps in upstate New York is probably verification enough that this was Fran Drescher that I had this relation with. But that would be the question. So if anybody wants to private eye this or Google this, she wouldn't remember my name because I don't remember her name. I just know her first name was Fran. I have no idea what her last name was. And she probably wouldn't remember me in the same regard. But if she went to the same camp and if she was a nurse's assistant, you didn't have to have a degree. She just kind of hung out in the nurse's office and was paid to help out. That's what a nurse's assistant is in the summer camp, by the way. Then it's her. And if it is her, so what? What am I supposed to do about that? I'm happy. She's happy. It would just be like the response, if it were true, would just be, oh, that's nice. That'd be it. Oh, that's nice. That's all. I don't go any further than that. It's not like music plays in the background, the violins go, and all of a sudden we embrace. And no, it ain't going to happen. That's not what happened then. It's not going to happen now. That's all I'm saying. So I'm going to put this subject to bed. Someone wants to pursue it on their own financial behalf. Enjoy.
I love Sam. Sam knows how to take care of a woman. Sam is also very small, okay. But Sam can last for hours. I have Sam in my pants right now. Sam, it's super absorbent material from Poise, but those little leaks.
Oh.
It's crazy thin. And look.
I wish I had Sam in my pants.
New Poise microliners. Get a free sample at Poise.com.
Poise. That's bizarre, isn't it? Anyway, man. I'm going to contact Tori Wainwright, or Rain Wrong. We used to do Tuesdays and Thursdays on the radio together. We're going to contact her, get her back. She's on the Cape over the summer, is my understanding. But she's a lot of fun, and we'll get that going as well. You know, we've got some building to do of this POD casting site. Song, isn't it? I like that song. Nice name too, but the song is even better than the name. When you put it all together, nice song, nice name. When I was growing up, kids, and a lot of you can relate to this if you're a little bit older, when I was a very young nursery school kindergarten guy, there was a Cold War with Russia, and it could be getting pretty cold again as things progress. And we were scared that Russia, at any moment back in the 60s, was going to bomb the United States and annihilate it. And we would send missiles over there, and everybody would die, and the planet would be over. And it was just a lovely time to live. And thank you to the guy that invented explosives and atom bombs and nuclear bombs. Thank you so much. You've enriched our lives greatly. The United States has an arsenal of something like 2,000 nuclear warheads, which they've since reduced. We assume the Russians have reduced that number as well. It doesn't take that many to end our existence or life as we know it. So it's redundantly the biggest asshole move in the world is to have so many nuclear warheads. Probably about 20 would probably do the trick for everybody. In any event, with Russia becoming very Putin stupid, we might be getting into another Cold War with all these sanctions and the two countries hate each other, and that's the kind of thing. We went through this a little bit with one of the Bush presidents, the George Bush, where we were told if something, if there was a dirty bomb situation or some type of a radiation situation, that all we had to do was go out to Home Depot or Lowe's and buy some duct tape and duct tape your windows and everything's going to be fine. And I thought, well, I have a better use for the duct tape. How about duct taping you, Bush? How about that? How about if I duct tape you to the wall so you can't move? I think I'd be a little bit safer in that sense. I think it was just a big commercial for Lowe's and Home Depot who probably said, we got some radiation coming, come by and buy our duct tape. What a wonderful marketing move that was. But back in the 60s, there was the Cuban Missile Crisis when Kennedy was alive, and some stuff before that where Russia just kind of hated our guts, and we had some nasty words going back and forth. You know, Russia would say, "You poopy pants," and we'd say, "Oh, you're poopy pants." And it was really, really tense. And there was a thought that at any minute there would be a nuclear or atomic bomb that would come our way. And if you were a child the age that I was in nursery school or kindergarten, you basically scared the shit out of me. And that was the early part of my childhood was the prospect and probability of total death and annihilation. What a wonderful way to grow up. It's no wonder why so many of us turned to drugs and pot when we got a little bit older. I didn't turn to drugs and pot, by the way. I smoked a little weed here and there, but drugs never. I no. It's not that my body is a temple, but it's certainly worth more than that. I consider my body a convenience store. Anyway, it was frightening. And I remember we would have drills in school just in case there was an attack. And we were told to stay away from the windows. If we were in the classroom for some reason, we were told two things. If you're in a classroom, get under your desk and get into the fetus position and hide your head between your legs. And I'm thinking, in case of a nuclear attack, what saves you more than a small wooden desk? It is a lifesaver. It is a small wooden desk and a lifesaver. And the other tactic at the same time was to be brought into the hallway of the school, to sit on the floor at the edge of the hallway, and again, take your head and stick it in your ass. And basically, what they weren't saying that that was a way to survive. It was just teaching you how in a lotus position to kiss your ass goodbye because you're going to die now. Which was the bottom line. I knew it. Even as a nursery school kid, I knew you're not going to survive this kind of thing. You're kind of just doing a kumbaya with other people, kissing, mass ass-kissing goodbye is what that was. It was a very traumatic situation. You know, if you weren't born in that area, you have no idea what I'm talking about. The worst thing that can happen to you is your cell phone gets wet. Oh, my God. It's the end of the world. Things have got worse than that, kids. Things get worse than getting your cell phone wet. Hard to believe, but true. So here's a story. One day, I'm playing in my backyard, and my mom says, why don't you go visit your friend? She's always trying to get rid of me. I said, all right, fine. And my friend lived on the other side of the neighborhood, maybe about 3 blocks away, I don't know. So I'm walking there. It's a beautiful Saturday afternoon. Not a cloud in the sky. The birds are chirping. It's a nice day. It's toward the end of the school year. It's like in June. Beautiful day, perfect weather, perfect temperature. And I'm remarking this as I'm walking down the street. My very young nursery school, kindergarten age. You're probably saying, Ron, why did your parents let you walk around at kindergarten age? Hey, independent. But I do remember walking down the street, and I do remember it was, I don't think I was in even grade school yet, or maybe first grade, I really don't know. It was Cuban Missile Crisis time. Actually, if it was Cuban Missile Crisis time, I was probably in second or third or fourth grade, something like that. So that's why I was walking to a friend's house. Okay, now it's coming back to me. All right, so I'm walking down the street, and beautiful, beautiful day, and all of a sudden, the sirens go off. But they're loud sirens, and you know it's not a fire, and you know it's not a police car. You know it's a siren coming from the top of the nearby school. And that's just not a siren. That's an air raid drill. And it may not be a drill. And it's going off, and it's like, oh, I've learned that in school. That's the duck and cover. Quick. My heart starts beating. It's loud. It's ear-piercing. The siren is ear-piercing. I remember my first reaction is to look up at the sky because it was a beautifully clear day. Am I seeing any Russian fighters? Is there some object being hurled toward my hemisphere? And it's loud. And I turned around and I ran home. And I remember that run home was like everything going through my head. Oh my God, my family, my life. I'll never live to see myself married. I won't be able to eat any more pie. No more chocolate milk. It was just a horrific feeling at that age. And I reached the house and that air raid, it's just siren is just blaring and everything seems so empty and finished. And I run into the house, and my mother sees the expression on my face of sheer terror. And she hugs me. She says, it's okay. I said, it's not okay. I know what that siren means. She says, Ron, it's 12 o'clock. I said, thank you for cataloging what time it is when I'm going to die. We need to sit in the corner and kiss our asses goodbye. That's what they taught us in school, Mom. She says, no, you don't understand. It's 12 o'clock. It's the air raid siren at 12 o'clock. They do it at 12 o'clock. I said, what? She says, yes. They've started doing that at 12 o'clock on Saturdays. They sound it to tell you it's 12 o'clock. And to test the siren in case they ever need it. Well, I'm a kid. I didn't read that in the paper. I didn't know that. I'll never forget being scared to the bone on that Saturday at 12 noon. And indeed, for the next 3-4 months at 12 noon, that siren would go off and wail, and everybody would stop what they're doing. And it wasn't to recognize, to set their clocks that it was 12 noon on a Saturday. It was that little breath of a moment when everybody realized and was reminded at 12 noon on every Saturday that that could be something else someday. Well, eventually the Cuban Missile Crisis ended. There were no more 12 o'clock sirens. Yes, we were still in a Cold War with Russia, but the chances of nuclear holocaust was less. Not gone, but certainly less. And things went back to what one would be called a normal life. until the day that Kennedy got assassinated, not too long after that. And then the country went into another dismal turn of sadness and shock, realizing that when things seem calm and normal, at any moment, the ground can shift from under you, and your life changes in a split second. It's always been like that, my friends, and it always shall be, because we live in a society that is just freaking weird, is what it is. So, as they say in the religious parts, be thankful for every day that you have, for every moment that you breathe, for every friend that you make. And as the religious people do, they bless the food that they're about to eat, thanking that it is another meal, another nourishment of the body. And I suppose there's something to that. And when you walk down the street on a Saturday at noon and you hear nothing, be reminded that it's not because we're necessarily safe, it's because we're just damn lucky. Hey, thanks for listening. I'll be with you again tomorrow.